This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is The Breakfast Grill, and I'm Mark Tan. Nairo Ceramic is a tile brand associated with high-end property. It's also a company known for its aggressive ambition when, in recent years, it has set up a plant in Indonesia, acquired a business in Spain, and announced plans for a main board listing on Bursa Malaysia. But has the company's recent financial performance matched these ambitions? We speak with Managing Director Ian Kok to get an update on Nairo Ceramics Group's plans to go public, their performance, and the outlook of the tile industry. Ian, thank you for joining us again. It's been about 15 months since we had you on our show, so let's start with a macro view of the industry. With the resumption of domestic construction activities and the easing of the property overhang numbers, what's your outlook for the industry growth rate for 2023 and beyond?
Hello, Mark. Happy to be here again. As far as the outlook is concerned, we are actually in, we have a regional business, right? And I would say the pace of recovery is different from each country that we operate in. I would say that our business outside of Malaysia is growing quite nicely. Malaysia is at a slower pace, right? But other than that, I would say that as far as our results are concerned, we are quite on track so far on a year-to-date basis, right? And we actually look forward to 2024 being an even better year than 2023.
So has the industry really turned around, and can it reach the previous highs of 6 to 7% growth rate per annum?
Okay, for the industry, what I can say is this is definitely recovering, right? Especially post-pandemic years, 2020 and 2021, right? The pace is not quite, through the 5, 6, 7 years ago, right? But having said that, in Malaysia alone, right, it is a little bit slower. But for the other countries that we operate in, I would say for several of them, they're already quite close to pre-pandemic levels.
Now, Malaysia has always got this high-end property overhang. And based on the latest NAPIC numbers, we look at it, it's about 41% overhang based on market value, right? So are we seeing any recovery in this segment, which you are traditionally so strong in? Or are there still tough times ahead for 2023?
I would say 2023 will continue to be subdued to a certain extent, even though it is improving from the previous year. And, quite rightly, as you have stated, we can see that the demand, right, as compared to 3, 4, 5 years ago, is actually lower. But there are still pockets of opportunities. I think property developers in general, they're looking for ways to innovate and to come up with developments. And some of them actually come up with very nice boutique developments, which actually provide us with that opportunity.
Now, previously, you mentioned in our last grill that your porcelain tile market share was in the 10 to 20% range. Has your market share increased further for 2023? And what would your market rankings be at the moment? And, really, who are your competitors? Or do you stand alone from the rest?
I would say that in terms of market share, right, since the last time we met, my estimation is almost still the same. I don't think there's any significant change, right? As far as our competitors are concerned, of course, we have several direct competitors. But in terms of being a market leader, I will humbly say that we're probably, in the top two, right? I'm reluctant to say that we're number one, but we're definitely in the top two.
All right, so who's number two then? I'll assume you're number one.
Number two, I think it's a toss-up because there are some companies where, they're public listed, so you can actually see their numbers, whereas there are some that are still private. So for those that are still private, it's a bit difficult to determine, what is the size of the business, right? But I would say if you're talking about the public listed companies, right, Whitehorse is up there and definitely, has been a major player all this while.
Now, 2022 was the year of rising input costs, ranging from, higher utility rates to difficulty in getting labor. We still have this start-stop government policy in terms of foreign worker recruitment. There was margin compression for almost every sector in Malaysia now. So how has Nairo managed this since pricing power, I assume, is still weak?
In general, I would say pricing pressure is there. That's without doubt. And I think, you can link it back to points that we were talking about earlier on, right, where you know, demand is slowly improving, but still far from what it was, you know, 5-6 years ago, right? So there's definitely pricing pressure. So as a manufacturer, right, you know, what we try to do is that we try to come up with innovative new products, right, to try to mitigate this pricing pressure. But the good thing that what we're seeing now, right, is that outside of Malaysia, we have been able to pass on the cost increase to the customers outside of Malaysia, right? There's much more, you know, the markets outside, they're a little bit more acceptable to newer products and at a higher price.
So there's obviously a lot of margin compression happening here in Malaysia. Are we still looking at more intense competition from cheaper foreign imports?
Actually, imports have always been part of the market for many, many years. In fact, I think at least, you know, the last 25 years or so. Right. And I wouldn't say that there's any significant change. Right. You know, local producers have been competing with imports all this while. Right. And I wouldn't say that there's any particular surge in any way. Right. And of course, you know, imports, right, are also affected by cost increases, you know, in their respective countries of origin. So I wouldn't say that imports are particularly cheap coming into Malaysia.
Obviously not helped by a weak ringgit as well, right?
Certainly, certainly.
So it looks like the industry may be ripe for some M&A activity. So Nairo in the past has shown a certain appetite to buy and acquire. Are you all looking to acquire anything?
At this moment, we're not looking at anything seriously, right? We have been approached before, right, in the last 1 to 2 years. But we really want to concentrate, you know, on our own corporate plans, you know, one of which, of course, which is already known, right, is to go for an IPO.
Right, indeed. And we'll get to that later. Referring to Nairo's Spanish purchase of Zirconia for 9 million euros back in 2013, how successful has this acquisition been? And how's your inroads into the European market?
Okay, we've been actually exporting to Europe even before the acquisition. Right. And we own this brand, obviously, and we continue to sell to Europe. But what I can say is this, especially in the last 1 to 2 years, right, you know, more and more countries are being nationalistic. What it means is that, you know, there's been a increase in the introduction of trade barriers, both tariff and non-tariff. Right. So that has affected sales somewhat. Right. But, you know, we are in several countries as far as our supply chain is concerned. So we've been able to mitigate it somewhat.
And earlier on, you mentioned that your overseas markets are recovering better than our own local domestic markets. So we know that Nairo has executed regional strategies to expand the footprint, notably Indonesia, Vietnam, Philippines, India and China. So out of these five countries, which has been the standout performer?
I would say, without a doubt, Indonesia. Indonesia has been very strong. And I would say both Vietnam and Philippines is showing a lot of promise. Right? I think there's a lot of potential there, right, you know, for the market to accept, right, and to receive, you know, a good brand with beautiful products. So I really see those two countries to be of great potential. But so far, Indonesia has been showing a lot of promise, yeah.
And if Indonesia is now kind of the darling of your portfolio, what sort of revenue or profit contribution are we looking at?
Okay, what I can say is that it's fairly significant. I wouldn't go into the exact numbers at this point, right? But Indonesia, other than Malaysia, Indonesia is the largest contributor.
So yes. Malaysia is still...
Yes, but Indonesia is catching up very, very quickly.
Right. And do you foresee Indonesia overtaking Malaysia anytime soon?
I think the potential is there. Right. Yeah, I think the potential is there because the pace of growth in the last 2 years, even in the pandemic year of 2021, right, Indonesia was able to register considerable growth.
And here in Malaysia, how has Nairo's retail strategy through this creative lab store been so far? What's the contribution to top-line revenue? And I suppose this is more of a B2C channel strategy for you all?
It is a B2C distribution strategy for us, right? And this is where, you know, we're quite different from our competitors. It is still very much a work in progress. Yeah, we've got in total now 40 outlets. Mainly in the Klang Valley area, right? But, you know, the rest are all distributed around the country. It is growing quite nicely for some outlets, and we are still learning about you know, about this retail business. There are some outlets that do very well. There are some outlets that are a little bit quiet, a bit slow. But we, you know, we really believe that this is the future for us and we will continue to invest in it.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Ian Kok, Managing Director of Nairo Ceramic Group. When we come back from the break, a look at Nairo's financials and what it means for their Bursa listing plans. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile. 5G now with you.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill, where the hot seat this morning is Ian Kok, Managing Director of Nairo Ceramic Group. Before the break, the outlook for their business after years of slowdown in the property sector. Now, Nairo has two factories, one in Johor, Malaysia, and the other in Bogor, Indonesia. Now, earlier on, you said that Malaysia and Indonesia are still your two most important markets. So are both factories operating at full capacity, and are there any expansion plans?
Both factories are running at full capacity. In terms of expansion plans, right, you know, we have an idea of enhancing. It won't be a huge expansion plan for the factories, simply because our business model in terms of manufacturing, right? We really believe in a contract manufacturing model that has served us quite well all these years, and we will continue to invest in it. So what it means is that though we will continue to lift up our own factories in terms of new technology and add incremental capacity to it, right? But it will always be done in tandem with growing our contract manufacturing business. So basically, we are operating on an asset-light model.
Are these plants labor-intensive and reliant on foreign workers?
Okay, for the factory in Malaysia, right, we do rely on foreign workers to a certain extent. In Indonesia, much less. Yeah, but I would say the level of automation, it is probably what I would call semi-automatic, right? It's not full automation, but then there are certain processes, right, that are actually where you can just run the machinery without any labor intervention, yeah.
So we're talking about Industry 4.0 manufacturing capabilities being put in these two plants.
Yes.
So early on, you mentioned that you're trying to, I suppose, balance your supply mix portfolio between your own factories and contract manufacturing. Do you have any sense what's the mix of that?
Yeah, this is actually a mix that we track very closely. We want to make sure that, you know, not one component far exceeds the other. So we do this quite consciously. And I would say right now that the contribution from our factories, right, is probably just slightly smaller than what we're getting from contract manufacturing.
But I suppose what you're saying is probably like something like 45-55% mix.
Yes.
Now, unfortunately, we only have 2021 financial numbers from CTOS on your company. But looking at the FY 2021 Nairo Ceramic numbers, revenues did cross the $500 million mark. You all clocked in 502 million ringgit, and it's an improvement of 3% year on year. But the PAT only clocked in about 1.3 million, you know, having a plunge, I would say, of 27% year on year. What's the reason driving this poorer profit performance? And what are the plans, or what have been the plans to address this margin compression?
Yeah, for 2021, right, you will recall, you know, we were hit by about almost 3.5 months of lockdown. This lockdown, actually, you know, everything came to a stop, right? Our factories had to stop. We couldn't deliver, we couldn't sell, right? So basically 3.5 months out of a full year, right, is more than 30%. So that, I would say, is the main contributor to the performance then. But for 2022, there has been growth and I would call quite a strong recovery. And 2023, as I mentioned earlier on, right, at least until the month of April, we are on track to our budget.
So 2021 was a COVID-related
yes.
issue, but 2022 and 23 looks really good.
Much better.
So yes. What's driving this significant improvement in performance?
I would say, you know, when you are able to deliver, right, you know, obviously you can register sales. But the ability to deliver is also dependent on your order book. I would say our order book has been increasing, right? We've been able to win more new orders, again, not only in Malaysia, but outside of Malaysia. And that has basically helped. Of course, you know, the others that contribute towards better margins, right, would be the new products that we've introduced. In fact, even in the quieter years, right, of 2022, when we were just recovering, we rolled out quite a number of new products. And I would say that, you know, as far as customers in Malaysia and Indonesia are concerned, we have established fairly good reputation when it comes to new product launches. Generally, stakeholders in the industry, they look forward to our new products, right? Because, you know, we have a trend of actually introducing innovative products.
So is there any indication you give your order book? How large has it grown? Are we going to hit the billion mark soon? Or has it grown 20, 30%?
No, actually, what I can say is this, right? We have a strategic growth plan, right, that has been put in place. And it is not just growing top line alone. We're also always seeking to be more profitable. And I would say, again, you know, looking at the trend of 21, 22, and so far in 23, and the order book that we have today, right, I think the growth plans are still very much intact.
So with a good order book also comes then the other side of the issue, which is collections. So on your balance sheet side, I know previously the impairments were way below 1%, which I think is an indication of a very healthy collections book, right? So how has it been like the last 2 years?
Actually, collection, right, you know, we tight discipline when it comes to collection. We track this every week. You know, we have a specific meeting for this and we track it every week. And this whole process of securing collection, I think it starts from the beginning, right? You know, right from account opening, do your due diligence. Then after that, right, it's basically tracking it very, very closely. A flow of information between finance and sales. And I would say we have been on top of it. Okay. Yeah, we are quite on top of this area.
Can you give us a sense what your trade terms are, your big customers?
Okay, generally, trade terms is around 60 days, generally. Of course, you know, invariably, you know, there are some customers that will exceed that 60, but we manage it to 60 currently.
Right, so back in October 2021, as part of your three-year plan, Nairo announced plans to go public. I understand the plans have been deferred to mid-2024. But based on our calculations, Nairo would need a combined 16 million profit for both 2022 and 2023 to be able to qualify for the main board listing requirements. So are we really on track for 2024?
So far, the answer is yes, right, for this, you know, main board listing. But of course, you know, we've also had discussions internally, and we do not want to totally discard an ACE market listing as well. Right, because we, you know, we've been a private company for many, many years. Mm-hmm. You know, when you become a public company, especially if it's on the main board, you know, the requirements on, you know, with the regulators in terms of reporting and compliance, that is something that we are considering as well, you know, to ease ourselves into this process, right? As we understand it through our advisors, an ACE market listing, albeit, you know, it still requires performance, but maybe not as stringent as a main board listing. But going back to your earlier question in terms of track record, we are still on track.
Are your competitors, those that are listed, are they mainly on the main board or on the ACE board?
Okay, all my competitors, there are three of them, they're all on the main board. And many of them have been listed companies for many years.
And finally, in September last year, Bursa Malaysia announced enhanced sustainability reporting requirements for both actually the main and ACE market listing. So this aims to elevate the sustainability practices and disclosures of our public listed codes, right? So can you share with us the ESG plans that have been implemented by Nairo?
Okay, for us, even as a private company, right, you know, we've been conscious about this requirement and this movement towards ESG. Internally, we already have a governance structure. I think that's always the starting point. And I would say that Nairo as a company, you know, we've been undertaking a lot of activities that are actually related to ESG. But, you know, during those years before ESG became the buzzword, we did it more for cost-saving purposes. For example, you know, our head office in Shah Alam, you know, we are operating on solar panels for many, many years. We have plans, yeah, to want to do that for our factory in Johor as well. Right, so we've been undertaking these activities in the past. Of course, now with ESG, right, being really, you know, in center stage, it will only fuel, you know, our activity and push us to operate in a much faster pace toward being more ESG compliant.
Now, I'm part of the whole carbon tax footprint and value chain calculation. It obviously may encourage you to co-develop your ESG plans with your customers and your clients, right? So has there been any cases where you've worked with your customers for this?
Not yet. Okay, we've done everything internally so far. One of the more significant things that we achieved, quite recently, we received a certificate called EPD, right, which is an Environmental Product Declaration, which was audited by a third-party assessment body, right? And what this certificate basically, what it says is that, you know, as a company, we've undertaken a study, right? And we know what is our contribution towards CO2 emissions, for example. And it is actually a study from cradle to grave. And with this EPD certificate, our customers, like our developers, for example, if they were to use our product, they will actually gain what you call LEED points, which basically helps them to make their buildings and their properties more green, right? So in that sense, you know, whatever that we do does have an impact on our customers. And there will be many, many more such activities.
So one last question, Yen, with regards to the Bursa main board listing. When do you think you'll be able to confirm with the market? Is it going to be quarter one 2024 or quarter four 2024 that you'll be headed for the listing?
Just to give an estimate, right? You know, because there's still a lot of work that's ahead of us, but we would like to be able to do it by Q2 next year. That will be the desired date.
I suppose that's the time we'll get you back on the show, Q2 2024.
We'll do. Look forward to that.
Okay, that was Yen Kok. Thank you very much for your time. We wish you every success on your plans moving forward. On The Breakfast Grill was Yen Kok, Managing Director, Nairo Ceramic Group. This is BFM 89.9.
The BFM Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile. 5G now with you.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.